Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station, 1043 The Fan.
And we are here. James Merrill from DenverFan.com filling in for Sack by Chad Brown.
Hi.
Back from Seattle filling in for Brandon Stokely. Lots to talk about from the game that you called on Saturday night, Chad. Obviously, the quarterback conversation was a big part of the broadcast. You guys were focusing on it. It has been the topic of conversation here on the station all day. Whether or not Teddy Bridgewater, with his opportunity with the ones, was able to flip the script. Because we were all talking on Friday. We did the war room over at Brothers Barbecue. That it felt like Drew had kind of won the job. He had taken the lead. There wasn't much that Teddy could do to get back in the race. And now it seems like it's a 180. Did he do enough on Saturday night to flip the script and move ahead in this quarterback battle?
Well, I'll back that up to Friday. I wasn't part of the war room, but it seems like the war room maybe overreacted last week, and now the flip of the 180 that you're indicating is overreacting a little bit too much this week. I think the truth is somewhere a little bit more in the middle. Having a chance to talk to Pat Shurmur, to talk to Vic Fangio, I think they see this much more in the middle than the sports media, which has seemed to just jump from one side to the other here.
Yeah.
And I know our job here is to have an opinion, not only have an opinion, but have an incredibly strong opinion. I think the strongest opinion is it's still a pretty fair, even battle.
Well, yeah, and that's definitely it of the overreaction Monday here to Teddy Bridgewater's performance. And look, I'm a Drew Lock guy in this battle.
I follow you on Twitter. I'm well aware.
I try to make that clear. But I thought Teddy played really, really well. He did. I mean, you can't watch the game and be objective and not say he looked good. But my one caveat for it is they didn't play that like they would have played a regular season game, right? Like, they're not going to go for it three times on fourth down in the first two drives in a regular game. It's why gauging preseason football games is a little bit tricky. Of Vic wasn't playing it straight up. That's not how he would do it come, you know, September 12th against the Giants. I think that skews the result a little bit.
I think you're showing your lack of detailed football understanding with that one. No, of course the preseason.
It took 2 minutes for you to roll your eyes at me today. That's pretty good. That's a new record.
Well, you know, I followed you on Twitter, so I had a sense on where things were going. So I didn't walk in the door with the pushback. I figured I would have to hear something before I developed my pushback. But the preseason, of course, is not the regular season. So when an opportunity comes up for you to test your fourth down plays.
Sure.
This team was 4 of 15 last year on fourth down. 4 of 15. That's not good.
No.
So
also troubling you had to go for it 15 times, right? Like, you're not moving the chains, but.
Right. Well, that speaks to a different issue. But the fourth down issue. Okay, we were not very good at this last year. Let's seize every possible opportunity that makes sense this year to try to improve on that in these games that don't count. So while you can say Teddy's drives were extended because of the fourth down conversions, I look at a team that is trying to put their quarterbacks in every possible scenario they can to improve what something was that was an issue the year before.
Well, and to be fair, in the first game in Minnesota, they went for it on fourth and goal from the two on Drew Lock's first drive.
Right.
I think in the regular season, they kick the field goal and take the points. So,
depending on the game and everything else. Yeah, yeah. More than likely.
So it's not as though it hasn't happened with both guys. And I get what you're saying about, hey, it's preseason. You want to work on these things. You want to test things that you were not very good at a year ago. You're trying to improve. Like, I understand all of that. I guess my point to it was, when people talk about how, well, you know, Teddy Bridgewater had two drives, they both ended in touchdowns, that's the part of it that I think is skewed, because I think it could have very easily been, yeah, he had two drives, one ended in a punt and one ended in a field goal, right? Like, so to talk about the points and what they got, I think is it's too much emphasis is being put on that by the Team Teddy crew that wants Teddy Bridgewater to win this job. That's all I'm saying. Oh, he had two touchdown drives. Yeah, they had three fourth down conversions on him. You don't think that skews that at all?
I prefer to if you want to go with numbers, 7 of 8 last week, 9 of 11 this week. And one of those incompletions this week was a drop pass. So Teddy, as advertised, controlled, efficient, calm in the pocket. All the things as advertised about Teddy were there. Plus, there were a few more down-the-field throws. I thought he needed to be a little bit more explosive this week than he was the week before, and he was. So he pushes that part of his game forward while still remaining the consistent guy that George Payton and Pat Shurmur knew that he was from Minnesota.
Do you think, because you spent a lot of time around the team and got a chance to talk to the coaches, do you think this decision has been made, or do you think it's still going to go all week? It's going to go into the Rams game. They're going to drag this thing out longer and longer and longer. What's your sense?
Well, the quote of the week last week from Vic Fangio was, it's pretty damn close.
Right, right.
And I was like, well, hey, coach, can you define that? Does that mean the battle is pretty damn close, or you yourself are pretty damn close to making a decision?
Yeah.
And he went with both.
What?
He said both are true.
Okay, all right.
And I, having been around enough coaches, I think I've got enough of a bullcrap radar
right. To
know when a coach is trying to confuse, say, the Giants, the Week One opponent.
Right, playing those silly Ranger
games. No, Vic's not playing games. He's literally trying to find out who is going to give his team the best chance to win right now. And he recognizes the right now is a very important part of that sentence. So it may be Drew Lock into the future, but I need to sell to my guys in the locker room that it's right now. And if I go, well, this guy's got more potential or this guy's got more upside, I can't sell that to a locker room that's desperate to win right now. We've got players who are desperate to win now.
Sure.
And we can't say, oh, well, the plan is to develop. No, we can't do that. I can't play games with the locker room, with this team. I have to evaluate this fairly.
Yeah, and I heard that on the morning show today. Stokely was talking about that, of how you'll lose the locker room if you give it to the guy who hasn't earned it. I guess I just look at it, and I've been out there for 13, 14 practices. We've seen two preseason games. Only thing I didn't really see was the joint practices in Minnesota. But talking to Nate and some people who were up there, you get a sense of what went on. Like, it's not as though Teddy Bridgewater is light years ahead of Drew Lock. Like, you can make the argument for either guy. After every practice, we're all kind of looking at each other like, oh, what do you think? Well, I don't know. He threw a pick, but, you know, he held the ball too long. Like, it's really, really close. So if it's really, really close, doesn't that kind of make it to where they're not going to lose the locker room with whatever decision they go with? And my point is, I don't think the guys in the locker room are sitting around going, man, Teddy is dominating this thing every single day. He is just lighting it up, and Drew can't play. I don't think it's that extreme. That's my sense, but did you get a different sense from talking to players as to how this thing is kind of shaping up?
I think you can look at Brandon Marshall's tweets from the last 24 hours to see it how most defensive players in the league are going to see it.
Okay.
So I'm not saying there's a riff in the Broncos locker room. Offense wants Lock. Defense wants Teddy. That's not what I'm saying. But I, as a defensive guy, see it very similar to how Brandon Marshall sees it. Vic Fangio, defensive guy, I think sees it through that lens as well. I think, you know, those guys defensively who have been here a long time, Justin Simmons, Von Miller, those guys probably tend to see it that way as well. So are you going to lose a locker room? No, I think this is a close enough battle where guys will move on, but there'll certainly be some grumbling.
So from a defensive-minded standpoint, what is it? And I saw Brandon Marshall's tweet. It was the all caps that this is the quarterback the Broncos need, and he put that in all caps. Why do you think a defensive-minded person, whether it's coach, player, whatever, would lean toward Teddy Bridgewater? Like, we haven't seen – I get, like, last year, well, Drew Lock made mistakes, and he put the defense in bad position. Like, well, he hasn't – this year, at camp, he hasn't made any more mistakes. He hasn't had a bunch of turnovers in preseason games. So what is it about Teddy Bridgewater that, if you're a defensive-minded person, that's your choice?
I can't do the James Merrilot and just wave my hand and dismiss Drew Lock's last year. 16 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. And plus, there were fumbles in there as well.
Sure.
So the turning over of the football, come on, man. I mean, there's no denying that.
But Teddy had, what, 11 picks last year? And I think he had more fumbles than Drew. So it's not like he's turnover free. It's not like he's...
But the issue was in Carolina, he was asked to play past his limits because they were missing Christian McCaffrey and they were trying to generate some offense out there. So not that I'm dismissing Teddy's last year, but if Teddy plays within Teddy, then he tends to be a safer with the football option than Drew Lock.
Okay.
Can we agree upon that, James?
Yes. I think as a general rule of thumb, I would agree with that.
Okay.
I think it's the gunslinger mentality. You can say you've turned it off or trying to check it or whatever, but you're still that way. And I think Drew Lock has more of that, and that leads to mistakes. Yeah, I would agree with you on that.
Oh, and at the same time, there were a couple of plays during the game where I was looking for Drew to just try to uncork it and throw it downfield, but he went through his progressions and went to what the defense gave him. Okay. And I called it out during the broadcast. That may not be the spectacular play that fans want, but that was the absolute safest play there. So I've seen the maturation of Drew Lock as well, but I cannot forget the 18 starts. I can't forget the turnover issues. So again, as a defensive-minded guy, as a team that's going to win based on their defense, for a team that's got a head coach who's a defensive guy, the salary cap disproportionately favors the defense.
Most expensive defense in football.
So if all those factors line up to me to say, if that's the case, this is how you want to win, this is how you want to coach, this is how you value your players, then choose the quarterback that supports the defense the best.
And I get that. Here's the part of that theory that I don't quite understand. And so you probably just have to set me straight on this, right?
Sure, that's fine.
Because there's this notion.
I'll be here for 3 hours.
You're going to have to set me straight a lot in 3 hours. There's this notion that Vic Fangio wants to win games 17-13, right? Like, that's kind of that theory of let's go out there, let's not make mistakes, but let's win low-scoring defensive type of games. As a defensive guy, like, that puts all the pressure squarely on the defense, which we've seen a half a dozen times since Vic Fangio's been here, right? They had the lead. It was a 15-14 lead, but they had the lead against the Bears. They had the lead against the Jaguars. They had the lead against the Colts, and they folded. I would think as a defensive-minded guy, man, give me the offense that can get us a double-digit lead, and then we can just get after the quarterback and turn it loose and, like, not have to play these type of games. Like, I would think you'd want the opposite of as a defensive-minded guy. And if you make mistakes, it's all right. Our defense is good enough. We'll go get it back. Kind of like the Broncos in the late 90s. Greg Robinson would blitz all the time, right, on defense? Because if it would burn him and, you know, Yancey Thigpen would get a long touchdown, now the offense is good enough to go get it back and match it. But it would also create turnovers and make plays and, you know, it allowed them to be more aggressive. If this defense is so dang good, they should be able to be more aggressive on offense and try and get leads and try and play to that. I think they're looking at this all wrong.
One of my favorite things to do when I sit down with coaches, head coaches in particular, when I'm doing prep for games, how do you want to win the game? What's your ideal way to win the game? And it's pretty simple to figure out who's an offensive guy, who's a defensive guy.
Sure.
Defensive guys use terms like shorten the game, limit their snaps, limit their possessions. So if that's going to be your philosophy, this is how you're going to win the game, then you have to play and coach the game that way. You can't just like, well, hopefully our offense scores some points and along the way we, you know, can then rush the quarterback on third down because we have a lead. You can't hope and wish your way into that. It has to be a part of your coaching style, your DNA. Was it a little frustrating for the fans in Pittsburgh when it was 3rd and 12? And we would throw a screen to Bam Morris for 6 yards. Yes, that is true. But it is also true, we were the number one defense in the league. So let's get 6 yards, a little bit better field position, punt it away, pin them back. So when we go 3 and out, our offense has a more favorable opportunity to score. So Bill Cowher understood, yeah, I can try to throw it downfield and do some things that we're really not capable of doing and hope they work, or I can continue to lean upon my defense. Was it pressure on us? Of course. but we were highly paid and we were really good. What is this defense? Highly paid and has the potential to be really, really good. So if I'm Vic Fangio and I'm weighing out and I'm saying, do I try to outscore Patrick Mahomes with Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater? Neither one of those guys are really a fair competition if you're going to try to outscore Patrick Mahomes. Or do I lean upon my defense to limit their exposure, to limit their possessions, to maybe get a Justin Simmons interception or a Williams fumble recovery like we got the other night? Those
right.
kinds of things, my defense is going to be better at that than my offense is going to be trying to outscore some of these better offenses.
If Drew Lock fell flat on his face in the last 2 years as many times as Vic Fangio's defense has, he wouldn't even be in this competition. They'd have ridden him out of town. So that's a little bit of this that I don't understand. But when you talk about Pittsburgh, all right, so you had to be in Pittsburgh then when it was Cordell and Neil O'Donnell. That debate, was that?
No. So my 96, it was Mike Tomczak and Cordell.
Okay. All right. So
the year before was when we went to the Super Bowl and Cordell was Slash.
Right. And right. he would fill in for Neil O'Donnell because that was O'Donnell. It was the Super Bowl, right?
Correct.
Okay. But I'm sure, especially early in his career, Cordell Stewart, when he was playing quarterback, not just playing the slash role, would make more mistakes, right? Like he would do things that Neil O'Donnell wouldn't do, from turning the ball over and whatever. But man, did he make that offense way more dynamic. And I would guess that made your team that much better when we still have a great defense and we have a guy on offense who can make some plays and put some pressure on the other team and give us the lead. Like, as a defensive guy, then, did you want Cordell or did you want Mike Tomczak?
As much of a CU guy as I am, and as much as I love Cordell, Tomczak was a better, more consistent, more reliable quarterback. The offense had more rhythm. Okay.
This is, like, that answer stuns me, and not because of the CU connection. Like, it's fascinating to me that you would rather have a guy like Mike Tomczak than a guy like Cordell Stewart out there who can make plays, score in bunches, you know, give you guys a double-digit lead heading into the fourth quarter. I think that stuns me.
You're rattling off the positives, but you're not really explaining the other side of the coin, the negatives.
Sure.
Okay. My first mini camp in New England. I'm having a conversation with Belichick during a period where I'm off because I'm an old guy. So I'm watching everyone else run around. And he asked me, what do I think of the team? And I was like, wow, coach, you know, don't take me wrong for me saying this, but I thought you guys would be more athletic, you know, as a team, back-to-back Super Bowls. He's like, you're looking at this whole thing wrong, is what he explained to me. And as he and I are having this conversation, Teddy Bruschi goes running by, and he explains that Teddy may only be a 7 athletically, but he's the best 7 every single day, and I know who he's going to be in every single situation in the game. Therefore, I can put Teddy in a position to be successful. He's like, you played with guys who probably are 9s athletically, but for some reason, for some situations, there may be only a 2. So in a critical situation in the game, my 7 is going to beat your 9 or sometimes maybe a 2 most of the time. We didn't win the Super Bowl because we had a bunch of Pro Bowl watches. We got a Super Bowl ring because I had guys who were reliable, guys who I could count on. And if you give any coach guys who are strong 7s, then they can put those guys in positions to be successful. And so that's kind of the crux of the argument. The inconsistency on if it's 3rd and 12 in the fourth quarter against Kansas City, which Drew Lock is going to show up? The gunslinger mentality? We know what Teddy's going to show up.
Okay, but what we've seen from Drew Lock so far, right, has been, yeah, last year he was a guy that would make some mistakes and on 3rd and 12 try and throw it downfield and it turns into a pick. We didn't see that the other night against Seattle. He didn't make those kind of mistakes. And if you go back to that first game against the Vikings, their opening drive, they march right down the field. Javonte Williams scores a touchdown. It gets called back for holding. So now it's 3rd and goal from like the 12. He didn't fire a rocket ball into the end zone. He checked it down. I think he threw it to Javonte Williams again. Javonte got to the 2, set him up to where it was a reasonable, you know, distance to go for it on 4th down. Like, I think he's doing the things that you as a defensive player would want him to. Vic Fangio as a defensive coach would want him to do. Like, the Broncos keep putting these hoops in front of him. He jumps through it, and then they tell him, it's not good enough. Like, it's that if that's the case, I feel like this whole thing has been a sham.
But it's not,
and it wasn't a competition because he hasn't made the mistakes that everybody says are his biggest problem and why he shouldn't get the job.
But it's not a competition in a vacuum. It's not Drew Locke versus Drew Locke. It's Drew Locke versus Teddy Bridgewater. So while Teddy came in with a certain advertised way about his play, in some ways he's been that, just that, but then added a little bit more of the explosive Drew Lockness that we wanted to see as well. So Teddy's safer, adding some explosiveness. Again, it leans itself to me to saying, well, then go with the safer guy.
So other night, the best plays I saw from both the quarterbacks, and we'll see if you agree with these. I thought the fourth down throw to Jerry Jeudy obviously was a great throw.
Right.
I think Teddy or Drew could have made that throw too, but it was a great throw. Can't take it away from him. I thought the throw to Salbert, the tight end, when he got down to
on
like
the left sideline, that was a great throw.
Terrific throw. That was
fantastic.
That was great. And I thought the best play Drew Locke made was the scramble and the Brett Favre backhanded pass, backhanded toss.
Of course you did.
Right? Like that was a great play.
Of course you did. That's where Drew Locke, that's the separator between Drew Locke and Teddy is the playground kind of play.
And it moved the chains.
But 75 to 80% of your plays are not going to be playground plays. They're going to be on schedule plays. So you can't be wowed by, oh my gosh, he flipped it. That's such a small.
No.
Go with the high percentage play.
No. I get what you're saying.
The Salbert play is way, way more impressive than the flip play.
But most games, NFL games, are so close. And especially if you're a team that's trying to win on defense, they're so close. You can look back. There's a reason NFL Network has a show called Turning Point. Like, you can go back and find in each game, like, the one or two plays, like, yep, that was it.
The fourth down play by Teddy. That would have been the play they would be talking about.
Okay. Or you go back to the NFC Championship game. Right before half, Aaron Rodgers throws a pick, and then you think the Bucs are just going to sit on it, take a field goal. Brady goes deep and gets a touchdown. So it's like a 14-point, 10-point swing in a minute. Like,
play calling 101, that was the sudden game. Change, go deep, just like the Broncos did last week after the safety, but go ahead.
So I think at some point in every game, you have to have a quarterback that can make a play, right? That can turn a third down.
A fourth and five, step ups in the pocket, evades the rush, keeps his eyes downfield, hits a crossing Jerry Jeudy, has the patience to let Jerry Jeudy unveil. Yeah, that's the kind of play we're talking about, right?
And it's the same play that Drew Locke made last week on third down. The exact same play. So we've seen both of them can do it.
No, the pocket was clean for Drew last week.
We
had to show patience to let Jerry Jeudy unveil, but the pocket was clean versus this time Teddy had to navigate the pocket.
And it's the same issue I had with Trevor Siemian. It's the same issue. It's going to be great if it's all on script, right? But how many times in an NFL game you have a 12-play drive where you don't get a holding penalty, somebody doesn't drop a pass, something doesn't happen to that's a negative play, and with Teddy Bridgewater and with Trevor Siemian and with Brian Greasy back when he got the job instead of
Peyton Manning was much better on script, Brister. Too. So what are we talking about?
If you can't go off script some, then they might as well just bring Sam Martin out as soon as there's a negative play, because Teddy can't overcome negative plays because he can't play off script. Drew Locke showed us again on Saturday night that he can with the highlight play of the game.
Good thing we got 3 hours, man. There's a lot of coaching that's got to happen during this show.
You are clearly Team Teddy. That's the sense.
No.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's the sense I'm getting.
I don't have a dog in the fight. I do not. You clearly do.
I am Team Drew.
I am not team either guy. I'm just simply saying, from what my experience tells me, this is the defensive-minded choice. But the fact that you want to highlight off-script plays when 75 to 80% of plays are going to be on script.
And he's shown he can do that.
Do you want the high percentage or do you want the low percentage?
I want
the high percentage.
I want both. And he's shown he can execute the script, and then he's the one guy that shown he
Teddy
can make the off-script play.
Is Teddy better on on-script plays?
Than Drew?
More consistent on on-script plays. Is that fair to
from
say?
From what I've seen in camp and preseason.
No. We have to have the entire body of work here. Okay, fair.
If you want to include last year.
Uh-huh.
And you want to include the 7 or 8 years that Drew's or Teddy's played before that, then yeah, okay.
Okay, there we go.
But this competition is based on, in my mind, it should be based on they were both here.
You cannot
and that's
have,
what we're going off of.
You cannot help human nature coaches. Pat Shurmur was in Minnesota with Teddy. George Payton was in Minnesota with Teddy. During our meeting with Coach Fangio, he talked about playing against Teddy when Teddy was in Carolina last year. Teddy was 30 for 40. He was a 75% passer. He wasn't playgrounded. Those were on-script plays. So our defensive-minded head coach played against a guy who threw for 75% against him and thought, that guy can help us offensively.
Yeah, and here's the problem with Vic Fangio. That's the same game Drew Locke went 20 of 29 and threw four touchdowns. Right? But he's more concerned about the quarterback that he went against.
No, he's not.
Who was way down, way behind, and let it come back.
I didn't say he was
finally
more concerned.
Figured out, find out where Michael Olajimudi is, and that's where I'm throwing the ball. And once Teddy figured that out, they moved up and down the field. They did. But it's like, hey, that guy picked apart my defense. He must be better than the guy who won the game throwing for four touchdowns.
He didn't say that. He said he played against Teddy last year and commented about how he played. You want to lump the Drew Lock comparison into it as if somehow Coach Fangio is Team Teddy. Again, we opened the show talking about how even Steven, Coach Fangio, has talked about this competition.
Well, that's what he's talked about. And I feel like you're Team Teddy. I feel like Vic Fangio is Team
you
Teddy.
You got a little bit of a persecution complex going over there because I'm not Team anyone. I do not have a dog in this fight.
Well, Vic Fangio made a comment after the game that tells me what team he's on. We'll play that for you coming up next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
Chad, in the first segment, when I was trying to convince you on this Drew Lock versus Teddy Bridgewater thing, which, you know, I'll continue on as the show goes, we were using a bunch of various quarterbacks to compare them to. We started talking about when you were in Pittsburgh, and it was, you know, Cordell Stewart and Mike Tomczak. Like, those are reasonable comparisons when you're talking about Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater. Okay, that makes some sense. Well, Vic Fangio, he went down a path after the game on Saturday night where he compared Teddy Bridgewater to a quarterback that probably is the greatest of all time, and it made me about want to fall out of my chair. Here's what Coach Fangio said after the game.
He's got good quarterback awareness and instincts. I think it's shown, you know, in the way he can move within a pocket and buy time that way. You know, there's two types of elusive quarterbacks, the ones that run around, and there's the other ones that manipulate the pocket to buy time. And the best in the last 20 years of that has been Tom Brady. And he's got a little of that in him as far as manipulating the pocket.
Okay, come on, Jim.
A little bit of Tom Brady in him.
No, he was saying a little bit of the skill that Tom Brady is the best at, which is manipulating the pocket. Teddy Bridgewater has a little bit of that in there. I'm not going to let you make a mountain out of a molehill here. He was not making a direct comparison of Teddy Bridgewater to Tom Brady.
That's exactly what he said. He compared him to Tom Brady from a pocket presence standpoint. He wasn't saying he's the same kind of quarterback.
Okay.
But I think that's just preposterous.
I saw three or four plays during the game. You saw them as well,
mm-hmm.
where Teddy bought time in the pocket, kept his eyes downfield like Tom Brady does, didn't run, and Tom Brady's certainly no runner, didn't, you know, Michael Vickett, you know, hit the turbo button like a video game, just calmly felt the rush, found some open space, got his feet together, delivered an accurate ball downfield, and kept his presence and wit about him. I think in some ways, yeah, if Tom Brady is the standard of that, we saw three or four plays similar using that same skill set from Teddy Bridgewater.
Okay, but
Tom Brady.
Before the preseason started.
And I do. Tom Brady's awesome.
If we were putting together a list during the offseason of NFL quarterbacks, best pocket presence, right? Tom Brady's probably going to be one. Like, he can't move. He can't scramble around. So, like, he has to be able to slide and do all those kind of things. Like, he's probably one. How far down the list would we have gone before we got to Teddy Bridgewater?
Super far.
Okay.
Right.
So to bring up Tom Brady's name when describing Teddy Bridgewater's pocket presence, I think is just a grand overstatement by Vic Fangio.
Do you think it was a fluke that Teddy was able to do that? Two nights ago, you think that was...
No.
He's not going to be able to replicate that again?
Well, now whether or not he can... I don't think it was a fluke. I don't know that you can replicate it when you're playing a regular season game and it's not as vanilla and you're playing against, you know, actual starters, it remains to be seen. Because, you know, and you and I get this from Brandon Stokley a lot too, want to talk about last year for Drew Locke. Like, if Teddy Bridgewater had such great pocket presence, why was he so bad with Carolina last year? Like, why is he on his fourth team in 4 years? Why is he, like, having to battle?
He almost lost his leg.
I get it.
They were questioning whether he was going to be an amputee or not.
But that was, like, 6 years ago. Like, he's bouncing around the league. He's turned into a journeyman. Carolina's paying paying more for Teddy Bridgewater to play for the Broncos than the Broncos are. Like, there's all these things that
because
make...
Carolina, they went with Sam Darnold. They're changing things.
Well, yeah, they went with Sam Darnold instead of Teddy Bridgewater, which continues to lay out this point. I just think you're starting to get the hyperbole train when it comes to Teddy Bridgewater. And I read between those lines and, like, Vic Fangio won't compliment Drew Locke on anything. Drew Locke could go 15 of 15 for 200 yards and four touchdowns, and Vic Fangio wouldn't say anything positive. And after the game, he's comparing at least a smidge of his game, of Teddy Bridgewater's game, to Tom Brady. I think that tells you all you need to know about this
Do you
competition.
Have some, like, burner Twitter accounts? Because
no.
there were people who were tweeting at me during the game when Teddy was in the game. And I was saying nice things about Teddy because Teddy was making nice plays. So I recognize my job here on this station is to be a little bit more hot takey and have some opinions. But I also recognize when I enter into the booth, my job is to call the game.
Yeah, describe the action that's happening in front of you.
Leave those opinions someplace else and call the game. And if I have an opinion, it's going to be based on what's happened in that game. So I'm just describing the action, and Teddy obviously played well. I think we all can agree upon that.
Without a doubt.
And people are accusing me of hanging off of certain body parts on Teddy Bridgewater. And I'm just like, my goodness, I'm just calling the action. And I'm thinking, is this James? Is this James?
No.
Subtweeting me? Has he got a burner account out there? What's going on?
I think to say anything negative about Teddy Bridgewater the other night, you would have been disingenuous.
Okay.
He played great. He did. But Drew Locke played great against Minnesota.
He did.
So, and it's what I told Stoke this morning when I was on with those guys. They were filling in for Schlereth and Evans. The one good thing about this debate is at least we're going back and forth on it, and both of them, when they had an opportunity with the ones, played great. That neither one of them fell flat on their face. They didn't.
I will say this about Drew, and as Team Drew Locke over there, feel free to push back after I get my statement out. The run game was better last week than it was this week.
It was.
And that set up the two touchdowns from Drew Locke because both those plays were off of play action. That Viking safety, that may have been the worst safety play I've seen in a long time on that KJ Hamler touchdown. The safety's running forward as KJ Hamler is literally running past him full speed. That safety would have had a difficult time if he just would have took off running to keep up with KJ's speed anyway. The fact that his eyes were so deep in the backfield, that set that up. So Drew Locke's play was very good, but he was certainly helped by the run game, which set up those two touchdowns because they were on play-action passes that fooled that Vikings defense.
And
can we agree upon that?
I'm with you. Now, part of that, though, is Pat Shurmur, right? Like, I think he called a better game against Minnesota, particularly when Drew Locke was in the game, than he did against Seattle. Like, they're not a team that's very good in three wide. They're not. And I think the number is, on Drew Locke plays, they were in three wide 18 times. And when Teddy was in, now Teddy played a lot less, but I think it was four. It's Pat Shurmur just doesn't seem to understand that his system and what he wants to do maybe doesn't work for this personnel, and he keeps trying to force that square peg in a round hole. I thought up in Minnesota, they did a great job of running the football, sticking with it, setting up play action, and Drew Locke can be really, really successful playing that kind of a system because he can hit you with the big strike. He can make those throws. To me, it was another example on Saturday of how Pat Shurmur loves him some Pat Shurmur. He loves that offense. Doesn't care if his quarterback can operate it.
Who's this coordinator who's like, you know what, I got a system, but man, I'm kind of lukewarm on it. No, they got their system because they think it's the best system.
But then they tweak it for their personnel, right? Like, Mike McCoy didn't just keep saying, nope, we're going to run my system with Tim Tebow. Like, no, we got to scrap this
obviously
thing.
Obviously, they had to rehaul
and
everything.
And that's the extreme example, but.
During the meeting, I said, you know, hey, Coach Fangio, you've got, you know, two different quarterbacks. And before I could finish my question, he cut me off and said, very much so. And we clearly have to tailor the offense to whoever the starter's skill set is once we make that decision. So I think your point about Pat Shurmur, I think Pat Shurmur's trying to install his offense, not just for the quarterbacks, but for everybody on the field. And then eventually, once the decision is made, then they can start tweaking and tuning things to who the starter is.
Yeah, one will be a bunch of two-yard checkdowns. The other one will have some deep balls.
James,
all right.
Got a James.
All right, we have been obviously debating this on the station for all the training camp, all throughout the preseason. We thought there was a glimmer of hope that a decision might actually be made today. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. May not happen anytime soon. Where do things stand on Teddy versus Drew? Training camp 50-50. We'll break it down coming up next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Oh, nice.
I never know what Richie's playing. Never have any idea.
Well, this is some classic. Good job, Richie.
Training camp is over. Both the quarterback candidates have had a chance to start a preseason game. All of that leads you to believe that maybe this battle should be nearing an end, that the decision may be upon us. Vic Fangio was asked after the game whether or not he's close to picking Teddy or Drew.
No, it won't be tomorrow. The earliest it would be early next week, or would let it go another week. Because these guys, both of them, Drew and Teddy, have done well, as you guys have seen, and they've made it a hard decision. So, you know, we'll give it thorough thought. We've been discussing it with the coaches, with George, all along, and we'll continue to do that.
You buying that?
I am buying it. I think I got pretty good, you know, bull crap detector from coaches. We've heard this from Vic Fangio essentially, you know, all training camp long. And this is what I heard in person. You know, he's literally sticking to that. And, you know, sometimes in a room when you're having those coaches meetings, there's the PR people and various other, you know, team folks around. Sometimes you can look around the room and somebody's a tell. Somebody gives a smirk or something.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
This is really how they're going about it.
Okay. All right. Which I believe he's being honest about it. I think it's preposterous that they're still going on this long because
Drew Locke's already won it.
Well,
James,
yes,
Merrillat, right?
Yes. In my eyes, yeah, he's already won it.
Okay. So you're not just team Drew. You also think Drew Locke has earned this start based on what has happened this training camp?
Yes.
With no bringing anything from the past in for either guy, based on what has happened since the start of training camp through Saturday night, Drew Locke is a starter for you.
Yeah. And the reason being, look, and I thought the whole competition was a silly idea to begin with. I think we all played sports, watch sports, like sports. The notion of competition sounds good, right? Like we should embrace that. Like you should be competing all the time for your job. But a quarterback competition is silly. It's ridiculous. And they've wasted so many reps down there with splitting them 50-50 instead of having your guy and letting him get the reps with the ones, play the preseason game with the starters, get that actual work in. I think it's just all been a colossal waste of time. And now they're going to tell us, well, we want to have three or four more practices and then a preseason game against a Rams team that is not going to play any of their starters. They're not going to play anybody that they're counting on September 12th in opening games. So it's going to come down to the most important position in all of sports. You're going to make this decision based on who plays better against a bunch of guys who aren't going to make the Rams roster. That seems silly and preposterous to me.
I can see where you could get that. First pushback will be competition. Pete Carroll has established a entire philosophy, program, outlook on life that is all about competition. It worked really well at USC. Works pretty good in Seattle.
Yeah.
So competing every day, nothing wrong with that.
But Magoo ain't competing with Russell Wilson. They know who their quarterback is.
But Russell Wilson, when he came in, was competing with the kid who maybe was from the Chargers.
Yeah. Matt Flynn, who came over from the Packers.
Okay, yeah, there we go.
Matt Flynn was the high-priced guy. But see, it wasn't a competition. They weren't splitting reps 50-50. Russell Wilson just went out in second half of preseason games and was great. Like, he was the best player on the field. And Pete Carroll, to his credit, is smart enough to go, well, let's see what he can do with the ones. And Russell Wilson went out and played great. And then he didn't care who was making the most money. He went with the better player. But it wasn't a competition, right? Like, they weren't going 50-50.
But no, okay,
it's not. It's not a competition when Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler are in camp together.
It should be for Brock Osweiler. It's not for Peyton Manning. It should be for Brock Osweiler. If you're number two, yeah, you want to Wally Pip everybody. This is how this works. You know, I can't make
I'm old enough to get that reference.
Right. You know, I miss a call to do a game. Whoever becomes my replacement, that's his opportunity to steal my job. That's how it works in life.
Sure.
Okay. I know this is a little bit different, this 50-50 thing. And to your point, both guys would love to get as many reps as they possibly could. And I think that's what Vic Fangio was talking about, how once the decision is made, we really have to tailor the offense and kind of speed this process up to get those guys, you know, the reps that they need. But when guys are even, how else do you do it other than shooting from your gut? And that, as you are clearly doing, as you're
being
a team Drew Lock cheerleader.
I would agree that it's been pretty even. I think Drew's played a little bit better, right? But I think it's been pretty even. So I'm basing it on, give me the guy who has the upside. Give me the guy who could be here for a decade. I just don't have any interest in a bridge to 8-9 or 9-8. To me, that puts you in NFL no man's land. So the ceiling with Teddy Bridgewater is so low that I don't think it's a viable path to go down. But I'm from the camp that would rather go 5-12 than 8-9. You get a better draft pick, and there's all sorts of benefits to it. 8-9, 9-8, Vic Fangio improves by three and a half games. Do they get rid of him? Do they move on? Like, it just puts them in this spot where they won't know where to go. And I think Teddy Bridgewater is more apt to put them there.
The criteria from which you are making the decision versus the criteria from which Vic Fangio is making the decision are clearly completely different. Vic Fangio said it a couple times. We're going to go with the guy who gives us the best chance to win right now.
And it's the exact same thing John Fox said every week when he refused to bench Kyle Orton and put in Tim Tebow, to the point where it became a hashtag, BC2W, best chance to win. It was what he said all the time, because these coaches, they fall in love with who's better at the whiteboard, who's more conservative, who's not going to make mistakes versus who can go out and actually make some plays and help you win games. And that Broncos team was so much better with Tim Tebow than Kyle Orton. They were so much more entertaining, which I know Vic Fangio doesn't care if we're entertained.
Nope.
I get it. But at the end of the day, the Broncos have been the duo of bad and boring, which is it's a double whammy, right? Like, at least if you're losing and you're entertaining and something's happening, you lose 31-30, that's more fun to watch than losing 14-10. So the Broncos have been bad and boring. I get you. I'm coming at it from a different viewpoint than Vic Fangio. But that's another reason why this was all a sham. It's not a question of, like, who had the better practice against the Vikings up in Eagan, Minnesota, or who had the better preseason. It's a philosophical thing. They should have known their philosophy in the offseason, right? Like, hey, this is how we want to play. This is how we want to win.
They do know their philosophy.
Then why are we doing this? It should have just been Teddy. If that's their philosophy, I disagree with it, but it's fine. Then pick the guy who fits that philosophy and don't have 2 weeks to tweak the offense to his talents. Spend all offseason doing it. Like, their philosophy wasn't going to change, so they should have just picked the guy that fit their philosophy. That's the other part of it, that just makes me want to bang my head against this desk.
Coaches want to see you do it, and then do it again, and then do it again, and then keep doing it. That's why, you know, poor practice players, Tim Tebow, takes them a long time to get on the field. If they were a better practice player, they would have gotten on the field earlier, because I need to see you do it. I need to have some sense of trust in you. And until you give me that in practice, or until the starter is just a waffle, the season is over, like Kyle Orton, then we'll see what we can see. You don't want it to be see what you can see as a coach. You want it to be clearly, you've shown it to me in practice. You've shown it to me consistently now in practice. You've developed my trust. Now I can put you in the game and I can expect you to do it.
I think practice is heavily overrated, because it's a controlled environment, right? Like, you know, especially training camp practice, where everything's scripted and, you know, you kind of know what's going to happen.
Not everything. Those move the ball, certain situational things should not be scripted, because that's good for the coaches as well to have unscripted periods.
But here's the part of it that I think coaches focus too much on practice, and they don't just look at the results in the games right in front of them, right? So let's go with the Orton-Tebow thing. There was a game, I think it was Orton's first year here. They're playing the Raiders. It's late in the game. They're driving. They're going to win the game. They call a screen pass. It's set up perfectly. I think it was Willis McGahee. He's just going to dump it off to McGahee. He's got a wall in front of him. He's going to run in for the touchdown to win the game. And Kyle Orton, the ball slips out of his hand. He fumbles. Raiders recover. Ball game over. Broncos lose. Tim Tebow, time after time after time, and he could play awful for 3.5 quarters, but man, with the game on the line in the fourth quarter, that guy suddenly turned into a different player because he was more of a gamer or whatever you want to call it. Like, I don't care that Kyle Orton was really good in practice. I care that with the game on the line and the perfect play called and you've been setting it up all day and it's there for the taking, you fumble the ball out of the, you know, falls out of the back of your hand, you lose the game. Like, give me the guy who can do it under pressure, not the guy who can do it on a Tuesday at 9:30.
I hear what you're saying. I think these are some pretty poor examples. I don't want you to be in the, you know, defense of Kyle Orton club.
That's a very small club.
Right. Nor should you be in the, hey, they were right to put in Tim Tebow, but all these other stops along the way where they managed to cut him and release him, all those guys were completely wrong. They just need to play Tim Tebow in the game because he couldn't do it in practice.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying the argument of it was Orton and Tebow. Tebow was the better option.
Right. I know specifically what you're talking about. But you know,
I don't think he should have played in New England or the Jets or
a global picture,
Jacksonville.
Yes, we've confirmed Tim Tebow can't play quarterback in the NFL.
Correct.
Okay.
All correct.
Right.
We have, for sure.
All right.
I'm just saying, you use the phrase best chance to win.
Yeah.
And it's what gets tossed out with Teddy Bridgewater a lot. And I guess I always just say, win what? Again, 8 or 9 games?
Win the first game.
That doesn't interest me. Well, if they go Teddy Bridgewater, it's Vic Fangio pushing all his chips in. Because he has to go at least 2-1 in the first 3 games with Teddy Bridgewater, or he's going to be on the hot seat.
Same thing with Drew Lock. It doesn't change.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of an out if he goes with Drew. He can always say, you know what, let's turn to Steady Teddy and see if we can turn this thing around. He buys himself a little bit of wood if he goes with Drew Lock. All right, what is it like to be in the booth calling an NFL game? I got all types of questions for you, Chad. I want to hear that. I want to get the inside scoop, get the stories. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.